Welcome to the 8th episode of our podcast series, in which hot topics including new initiatives and alternative viewpoints on patient engagement within the life sciences sector will be covered. Although patient engagement is more and more common nowadays, it is absolutely crucial that it is also meaningful and sustainable. With this podcast series, we would like to contribute to achieving that goal. My name is Roger Lefteberg, and I'm a senior partner and co-owner of AdMedicum. And today I'm sitting here with Jennifer McDonald, an alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency patient ambassador, all the way from Mexico. And you are doing that for Fundación LAVEX AIR. And you are passionate about raising awareness for rare diseases in general, and in particular for alpha-1 AATD in Mexico, Caribbean, and Latin America.
That one is for CEPCAL. CEPCAL stands for Collaborative of Rare Diseases or Enfermedades Raras in the Caribbean and Latin America.
Okay, cool. So, Jennifer, you know, you are so enthusiastic that you're already jumping right into all those kind of abbreviations, but welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here having this conversation with you. And thank you for opening this channel. You know, for me, it's great just to have this communication and try to expand a little bit my purpose.
As a starting point, and because I think that's always interesting for our listeners, and you know, maybe not everybody knows you, of course, Jen McDonald. So maybe tell a little bit about your personal journey, where everything started, you know, related to your role now as a patient ambassador, and what were the initial catalysts and motivation for you to become active?
Roger, it just all started like, I mean, if I tell you, you're going to be like, no, that's not true. That can't be possible. Well, it's possible. I have a marketing background, so nothing to do with, you know, nothing like medical stuff or anything. But the thing was, in 2013, I got like a bronchospasm. So we're talking about more about than 10 years. And then I have like this bronchospasm because I have like a... So I get into the hospital, the doctors start checking me, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, a stroke. And like a hemorrhagic thing, and I'd lost like 500 milliliters of blood. Yeah. And then that's where my new best friend start living with me. Is a titanium plate. So I have a titanium plate here with 86 screws on my skull. So already removed, they made a craniotomy. They just took the piece of my thing because my brain was still like swallowed.
Sure.
So nobody knew, none of the doctors, they knew exactly what happened. This was in 2013, like I mentioned. In that time, I was working for a company, and they were really, really nice to me. You know, they were like, yeah, super, we're going to go, you know, look after you and this and that. And it was fantastic until they just say, well, we'll stop. And then you're on your own. And then fire me.
Really?
And all I was of like, a sudden? Yeah, all of a sudden, yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, from one day to another, from Tuesday to Wednesday, I was just like, out. Okay. I said, hold on a second, you know, like, hold on a second. You can't do that. I said, how are you going to give me here, you know, with my half, like, head open like a pineapple thing? I said, how? Yeah. Because they treat me like this, like a brand of phones, you know, you can say. Yeah, without saying names.
It's a bad movie, basically, that you got into.
Exactly. So they say, well, yeah, it's because of your situation, your health. It's more important for us than, you know, than the job. And I say, yeah, but that's what you think. What I think and what my doctor said is that I'm ready to get back. So why you are not accepting me? So that for me has another like a hit, you know, because I was,
of course,
I was just willing, you know, I was just willing and I was just trying. And then again, I have this like marketing background and up and down and go here and then go there and then do this and then do that and then go here. And, you know, and then all of a sudden I just see myself like sitting down with an open head and one hand in front and one in the back. I said, what am I going to do? I just feel like robbed, you know, like my health, the job. Why is this happening to me? That was a core question. Like, why me? You know, like, why? What's the reason why? What, you know, I asked so many times, Roger, you can't imagine. So this was in 2013. So 2014, my titanium plate arrived. Okay. And with that thing, the stroke part, it was so much more important that time.
Can I maybe ask you one thing in between the story? So the moment you went into that, you know, you got your titanium plate and for your head, and you retreated, you had drugs. Did you know at that time already what kind of disease you actually had?
No. That was a problem. That was a problem that I just entered. And in Jennifer's mind, I entered because of the bronchitis thing, right?
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, I get out of there with a diagnosis or like a prognosis from alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. And I was like, okay, well, should I wear it, eat it, or what is it? What is it? Mm-hmm. And nobody can tell me. So I went to the public, obviously, you know, the public health. And they said, well, it's a kind of COPD, but not really. Okay. Yeah, like this, like a kind of, what do I have to do, you know? And then that's it. And off you go. I said, well, no. So then that's where this path from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor to pneumologist to pulmonologist to every single doctor that you can imagine, I visit.
Okay.
And it was until 2015, so 1 year after, that I was re-diagnosed.
Okay.
So, but in this case, in this re-diagnosed thing of alpha-1, it was already with a private doctor, and I started already, but that time I already started with an oxygen-like therapy. So as you might see, I have like this oxygen 24/7.
Sure.
So I started back in 2015, and the doctor said, Jen, I'm gonna try you. I'm gonna test you for alpha-1. So he explained me all what was it and this and that. He was working really close to the U.S. Dr. James Stoller, and he was one of the principals. I said, like, I would say that he started, like, you know, researching about this gene, like SERPINA1, mm-hmm. and then he said, like, Jen, it's like if you were smoking or like, he actually asked me, I said, do you do drugs or something? I said, well, no. I said, maybe. Yeah, I said, like, well, maybe a beer every now and then, but like drugs, no.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, do you live like in a like mine place? I said, well, no. Yeah, I mean, I live in Mexico City, but you know.
Sure, but that's not a mine.
I mean, pollution, but sure. I mean, yeah, over the, you know. And then, because he started making me some weird questions, I said, like, well, now he started, and then I knew, and then I understood that why he was asking that, just trying to find out what was behind that, what was underlying the COPD. Because the great problem was that effectively in 2014, they were treating me as a COPD patient.
Sure.
But the problem was, or the problem is as of today, and that's where this whole advocacy started for alpha-1 started and began. Because COPD is the result of having alpha-1.
Mm-hmm.
So the agent one, the causal agent is alpha-1 antitrypsin.
Sure.
A deficiency.
And in order to get some reasonable treatment, you need to know the real cause, of course, and then...
Exactly. Okay. But they didn't know the real cause. What that happened at the time, they were just trying to diminish the symptoms of a COPD.
Okay.
So the doctor said, Jen, I have two news. A good news and one that is not really good. Say, okay, great, we know what you have. fantastic. And the not good news is that, well, there's no treatment yet. And that's what I feel like. Now, what's going to happen to me? Okay, so the doctor said, Jen, don't worry. Just, you know, take it easy. We are going to try to alleviate a little bit until the medicine is here, right? So what you have to do is you have to make a relocation. So you need to get from 2,000 meters over sea level, that is Mexico City, to 2,500 meters, you have to go to sea level. So that's going to help your lungs to breathe better, right?
Okay.
But you know what I mean? It's not like I changed, like, go like 5 minutes away from your house. And so it's sell everything. So yes, we did. We sold everything and then remove and then reorganize everything and then reorganize this thing and then move my dogs. I had 8 dogs.
So eight I was dogs? Fine with
8, yes.
That's not one or two, indeed. Okay, interesting.
You know, I know chihuahuas, eh? And it was not chihuahuas. You can just put it here. No. They were like a Labrador. Well, they're still here with me.
Okay, cool.
And And then I said, like, well, it is what it is. And then just put a big smile on your face and keep going.
Just to focus in a little bit on that. So you were living, of course, clearly in Mexico. You are living in Mexico. You got diagnosed to the right disease at a certain point in time, maybe a little bit late, but in the end you got there. You relocated to a lower location to be able to better breathe. But you had the knowledge at that time already that there is a drug that is available in other places in the world.
Yes, that's right.
But it wasn't available in Mexico.
It was not available in Mexico.
I'm just trying to get a little bit through to the point, because now you are using that drug.
In 2016, yes, I got my thing, but the drug was not available in Mexico.
Okay.
So try to imagine on top of that, all this frustration, saying like, yes, I know what I have. Yes, great, fantastic. But no, you can't buy it here.
No.
Or you cannot get it here. That's when we realized that in Europe, they started living well. They took like, they are far behind Europe in Alpha 1 and some of the rare diseases, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my family started like looking and talking to laboratories and talking to pharmas, and they arrived with one pharma and they said, well, we produce the biological. So we produce the drug. And say, okay, fine, great. Well, could you please just send us like, you know, these vial things? And they just start laughing, like in a good way, you know, like, well, we would like to, but we can't.
Sure.
And then, well, one of my aunties said, like, well, you have to, because my niece is dying and you have to help her. She was in a coma already, so you have to help her because you're a pharma and it's supposed that you work for that. You work for patients. And that phrase just gets stuck, you know, until today. I said, that's right, you know. I acknowledge all people that work for pharma. And they really, like, are, like, patient-driven, you know. They say, like, they can actually put in our shoes. And they understand. So then it was, like, you know, consultations every three months, every 6 months, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2016, so 2 years after my very, very first diagnosis, 2 years after that, and 1 year after my doctor said that I have it, he rang me and said, Jen, good news. The drug is available in Mexico in 2016.
Okay.
And I was like, yes, man, we made it. Yeah, we made it. Great. And he asked me, like, do you have like a, I don't know, I don't remember. It was something ridiculous. Like, let me see. It was 9,000 pesos, a vial. So 9,000 pesos, it's pretty much like 300 US each one.
Okay.
And I need 3. I need three a week.
A week.
So just make the numbers. Yeah. So made the maths. And that's a little bit like way too
much. A lot of money. Clear.
So that was in 2016. So we start 2016, 17 and 18 saving for treatment. It was saving. We sold everything you could imagine. And that's another key point that right now I understand and I push for that, because when you have any disease, right, but mainly in the rare disease, because they're so expensive, it becomes your family problem.
I think, you know, about 20 years ago, I started working in rare diseases myself, actually. And one of the things that I learned very quickly is if you treat a patient with a rare disease, you're actually treating the family of the patient with the
exactly.
rare disease.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. And I think that sentence always sticked very much somewhere in my brain.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it has, exactly, like you say, it's like a socioeconomical impact.
Sure.
You have like a stigma. I felt that, right? Because it was this lack of communication and it was this lack of information about rare diseases. And we, people that have rare diseases, I think at some, maybe in some points yet in 2024, there are people somewhere over there maybe thinking exactly the same and feeling exactly the same way.
So Jen, if I listen to your whole story, and of course you observed a lot and you have gone through a lot basically in those first years already, but I think what I digest from your story is that you really felt that the viewpoint of patients, of you in this case, as an ambassador, and raising awareness for rare diseases in particular in Mexico or in Latham, is one of the key drivers that came due to everything that you had to go through over time.
Exactly, Roger. And I think you got the point. And that's pretty much, that's my motto. You know, when I decided and say, okay, this is what happened to me. And I haven't even talked to you, you know, about like all the problems that I have, like other like really strong problems that I had. Well, in 2019, the money's over, things to be sold are gone. So now what I'm going to do? And then that was another problem, because I say, well, now what are we going to do? Because as I mentioned, it was way too expensive, way too cost. So then I approached to a lawyer, and the lawyer said, well, take your case to a federal court. And I took it in 2019. And the judge said, yes, you are granted to have your medicine. He told me, well, not the judge, the notification arrived. I said, yeah, you have to go to the hospital and get there and you get the medicine. He said, yeah, great. Happy times. I arrived there and say, okay, fine. I came here with a little document. And said, I came here to pick up my medicines.
Sure.
And I think the people like look just staring at me saying like, oh, poor lady, haha. And I was like, okay. So they try, you know, they put me into the hospital. They actually assigned me like a bed. And I was like, well, no. I think this is a mistake. I just came here to pick up my medicines. Yeah, but we have to make some exams and some tests and this. And I said, no. I was there 39 days.
39 days.
And I said to my mother and to my husband, I said, I am not moving from here, because the judge told me, you're going to go there and get your medicine. Sure. And they didn't want to. They were really like rejecting, and they were really like against giving it to me. And I was like, well, why? If the judge already say that you have to, it's an order. Sure. It's a judicial order. Until one point, it would arrive one point that my body said, you can't do it anymore. You can't make it anymore. You are so much under stress. And then I was fine. And then like, black, something disconnect me. And I went to 14 days in a coma.
Really?
Yeah. I was 5 weeks in ICU. I'm alive. I mean, I can comply. I'm alive and great. But the problem is that that's on them, because they didn't comply what the judge says. So after that, and after they understood that they were trying with a woman that can't, and they will never like stop her. And then I started making this visibility. And then I make it like media. And then I say, guys, they're not complying and I need help. You have to understand that rare diseases are here. Here in Mexico, we just recognize 20. It's 20, the number of the rare diseases that they recognize here. 23, well, they just recognize three more.
That's ridiculous, only 23. So it shows basically that they are so much lacking behind.
If you ask me, I would say it's number one, it's education. Mm-hmm. Number second, it would be a training. And number three, absolutely awareness. Yeah. That's lack of awareness. It's not just like doctors. Patients also, we need to be more proactive. Mm-hmm. If a doctor said for the very first time, well, I think you have, and you see him like he doubts or anything, just change doctor. Go for a second opinion, but don't waste your time. Don't lose your time. Go straight ahead.
So if you say that, which I understand, of course, from your perspective. So
yep.
You say patients need to be more present, be more loud towards their healthcare professional.
Yeah, I believe that what patients need to be more present as well, to be more pushing more, in my case, in this country and in Latam, to pushing more and creating these organizations and join organizations like in this case, you know,
supporting
like
each other, SEPCA, and helping each other, etc. Yeah. Is that improving over the last years in Mexico and later in general, the patient's activism or the patient?
Absolutely.
How do you look at that development over time?
Absolutely, there is like a much more like organization. There's more patients looking actually after organizations. In SEPCAL, where I am, this collaborative starts, you know, to get patients from LATAM and organization. And this is like the umbrella from lots of organizations, from hypertension, like fibrosis cystic or cystic fibrosis, or some rare diseases, right? Mm-hmm. And at SEPCAL, there's another one called here in Mexico, which is another one very important. It's called Pensemos en Zebras. It's called like a zebra thought, you know, about this rare disease case. And now, yes, I can tell you that absolutely I've seen an improvement. Yes, we're still short. We still, there's still like a way to go. But we're way stronger than it was like 10 years ago when I began.
So are companies supporting these kind of collaborations, and are they working together with patient organizations?
Actually, no. You know, it's not like a daily bread. It's like every now and then we have some companies that, yes, they do a lot of work with patients. And because the compliance here in Mexico is like a really like particularly thing, with pharmaceuticals, but yeah, it's not like the common day. But yes, there are some of them that they're like going and helping and supporting and being really like collaborative, you know, for SEPCAL, for Pensemos en Zebras, for many foundations now, or associations or organizations. OMER, there's another one which is a Mexican organization for rare diseases. So yes, I think we have making like a way in these rare diseases. We are not there yet, but we are preparing. And at least in my case, and I go back to your original question, like what made me and what I am doing just to make this bigger and bigger. Well, I am preparing myself even more. Right now I'm studying law. Okay. This is my second degree. Yeah, this is my second degree, in marketing and law. I'm studying a diploma in genetic, in genetic and rare diseases.
Okay.
So I went in the law school, and I'm preparing just to make a difference with people and for people living with a rare disease. How can I prepare myself? Is, well, yeah, you have to go to Congress, you have to go to summits, you have to go to conference, you have
be
to
be everywhere.
You have to be everywhere, and you have to be present, because you as a patient, you have the obligation to tell them what would happen if you don't, if they don't do what actually I passed through. That's my motto, and that's what actually I am preparing myself, and I am education. And I joined CEPCAL, and I joined Love for Air as a Alpha One ambassador. And I've been very working really close with Alpha One Foundation as well, so in Miami.
Thank you very much for your openness and sharing all these, you know, in the end, very personal stories, right? Everything that you went through and what make you now go really fanatic in the right direction for future patients and for other patient groups, and you know, going to law school and all these kind of things for that purpose. It shows what your ultimate goal is and what your passion is, what drives you. And I think that is great. Yes. And you know, I've got to know you as a very, you know, engaging personality, let's say it that way. And that's really nice. And you're a pleasant personality as well, of course. So finish off with one sentence or one final thought on what you would like to wish for Latham to happen in the next couple of years.
First of all, we have to, as a patient, you have to create your safety net. You need somebody that actually make the function of a safety net.
Sure.
Number one. Number two, I would say for the patient and caregivers, all my respect. Definitely. Because the caregivers, sometimes they sacrifice in a good way, and I'm making these sacrificing things, their own lives. For the caregivers, in this case as well, my husband, he said, Jane, ever since 2013, I haven't slept once, relaxed. So I have, a final message. Number one, to the patient, you can't give up. You have to wake up every day being grateful and being thankful that you're alive. But I also understand that in countries like in Latam, countries, it's a little bit more difficult than in Europe or in the US. But I think that's where the strive is getting stronger and together. So again, for patients, don't give up and just think that a day is day by day. And if you feel really, 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 really bad, my recommendation would be think one of the day that you feel worse. And then you will say I'm feeling better. I mean, it happened.
We should just stop with that thought. I would like to really say thank you for this conversation. It was a pleasure. Thank you for your time today and the willingness to share your story and share some thoughts and issues in the Latham region.
I am going to commit you the second podcast, obviously, if you want to, because in October, we're going to have the second International Congress of Rare Diseases here in Latam. It's a CEPCAL's second International Congress of Rare Diseases. I would love to share with you the outcome.
Let's now say to each other, let's meet up again after the conference, and
the
you
Congress,
can share
some
outside insights from that conference, and
exactly,
and we can chat more about how it looks for Latham for the future. Thank you very much again.
Thank you to everyone that is listening to this podcast, and my name is Jennifer, and all the way from Mexico City, I send you a big kiss and a big
thank you very much. 8th I hope this 8th episode was informative and inspirational. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and stay tuned for the next episode.